They were already at the door when Dunworthy opened it. Two medics from infirmary pushed through, carrying kits the size of steamer trunks. "Immediate transport," Mary said before they could get the trunks open. She got up off her knees. "Fetch the stretcher," she said to the female medic, "and get me a skin temp and a sucrose drip." "I assume 20th century's personnel have been screened for dwarfs and drugs," Gilchrist said. One of the medics knocked past him with a pump feed. "Medieval would never allow..." He stepped out of the way as the other one came in with a stretcher. "Is this a drug over?" the male medic said, glancing at Gilchrist. "No," Mary said. "Did you bring the skin temp?"
"We don't have one," he said, plugging the feed into the shunt. "Just a thermistor and temps. We'll have to wait till we get him in."
He held the plastic bag over his head for a minute till the grav feed kicked the motor on, and then taped the bag to Badri's chest. The female medic took the jacket off Badri and covered him with a grey blanket.
"Cold," Badri said. "You have to..."
"What do I have to do?" Dunworthy said.
"The fix."
"One, two," the medic said in unison and rolled him onto the stretcher. "James, Mr. Gilchrist, I'll need you to come to hospital with me to fill out his admission forms," Mary said. "And I'll need his medical history. One of you can come in the ambulance, and the other follow." Dunworthy didn't wait to argue with Gilchrist over which of them should ride in the ambulance. He clambered in and up next to Badri, who was breathing hard, as if being carried on the stretcher had been too much exertion. "Badri," he said urgently, "you said something was wrong. Did you mean something went wrong with the fix?"
"I got the fix,"
Badri said, frowning. The male medic, attaching Badri to a daunting array of displays, looked irritated. "Did the apprentice get the coordinates wrong? It's important, Badri. Did he make an error in the remote coordinates?" Mary climbed into the ambulance.
"As acting head, I feel I should be the one to accompany the patient in the ambulance,"
Dunworthy heard Gilchrist say. "Meet us in casualties at infirmary," Mary said, and pulled the doors to. "Have you got a temp yet?" she asked the medic.
"Yep," he said. 39.5C, BP 90 over 55, pulse 115.
"Was there an error in the coordinates?" Dunworthy said to Badri.
"Are you set back there?"
the driver said over the intercom. "Yes," Mary said. "Code 1.
"Did Pahalski make an error in the locational coordinates for the remote?"
"No,"
Badri said. He grabbed at the lapel of Dunworthy's coat.
"Is it the slippage, then?"
"I must have,"
Badri said.
"So worried."
The sirens blared, drowning out the rest of what he said.
"You must have what?"
Dunworthy shouted over their up-and-down klaxon.
"Something wrong,"
Badri said, and fainted again.
"Something wrong."
It had to be the slippage. Except for the coordinates, it was the only thing that could go wrong with a drop that wouldn't abort it, and he had said the locational coordinates were right. How much slippage, though? Badri had told him it might be as much as 2 weeks. And he wouldn't have run all the way to the pub in the pouring rain without his coat unless it was much more than that.
How much more? A month? 3 months?
But he told Gilchrist the preliminaries showed minimal slippage. Mary elbowed past him and put her hand on Badri's forehead again.
"Add sodium thiosalicylate to the drip," she said, "and start a WBC screen. James, get out of the way."
Dunworthy edged past Mary and sat down on the bench near the back of the ambulance. Mary picked up her bleeper again. "Stand by for a full CBC and serotyping."
"Pylon nephritis,"
the medic said, watching the reads change. BP 96 over 60, pulse 120, temp 39.5.
"I don't think so," Mary said.
There's no apparent abdominal pain, but it's obviously an infection of some sort with that temp. The sirens dived suddenly down in frequency and stopped. The medic began pulling wires out of the wall hookups. We're here, Badri, Mary said, patting his chest again. We'll soon have you right as rain. He gave no indication he had heard. Mary pulled the blanket up to his neck and arranged the dangling wires on top of it. The driver yanked the door open, and they slid the stretcher out. I want a full blood workup, Mary said, holding onto the door as she climbed down. CF, HI, and antigenic ID. Dunworthy clambered down after her and followed her into the casualties department. I need a med hist, she was already telling the registrar. On Badri... What's his last name, James? Chaudhuri, he said. National Health Service number, the registrar asked. I don't know, he said. He works at Balliol. Would you be so good as to spell the name for me, please? C-H-A, he said. Mary was disappearing into casualties. He started after her. I'm sorry, sir, the registrar said, darting up from her console to block his way. If you'll just be seated. I must talk to the patient you just admitted, he said. Are you a relative? No, he said. I'm his employer. It's very important. He's in an examining cubicle just now, she said. I'll ask for permission for you to see him as soon as the examination is completed. She sat, gingerly back down at the console, as if ready to leap up again at the slightest movement on his part. Dunworthy thought of simply barging in on the examination, but he didn't want to risk being barred from hospital altogether, and at any rate, Badri was in no condition to talk. He had been clearly unconscious when they took him out of the ambulance. Unconscious and with a fever of 39.5. Something wrong. The registrar was looking suspiciously up at him. Would you mind terribly giving me that spelling again? He spelled Chaudhuri for her, and then asked where he could find a telephone. Just down the corridor, she said. Age? I don't know, he said. 25? He's been at Balliol for 4 years. He answered the rest of her questions as best he could, and then looked out the door to see if Gilchrist had come and went down the corridor to the telephones, and rang up Brazenose. He got the porter, who was decorating an artificial Christmas tree that stood on the lodge counter. I need to speak to Pahalski, Dunworthy said, hoping that was the name of the first-year tech. He's not here, the porter said, draping a silver garland over the branches with his free hand. Well, as soon as he returns, please tell him I need to speak with him. It's very important. I need him to read a fix for me. I'm at... Dunworthy waited pointedly for the porter to finish arranging the garland and write the number of the call box down, which he finally did, scribbling it on the lid of a box of ornaments. If he can't reach me at this number, have him ring the casualties department at infirmary. How soon will he return, do you think? That's difficult to say, the porter said, unwrapping an angel. Some of them come back a few days early, but most of them don't show up until the first day of term. What do you mean? Isn't he staying in college? He was. He was going to run the net for Medieval, but when he found he wasn't needed, he went home. I need his home address, then, and his telephone number. It's somewhere in Wales, I believe. But you'd have to talk to the college secretary for that, and she's not here just now either. When will she be back? I can't say, sir. She went to London to do a bit of Christmas shopping. Dunworthy gave another message while the porter straightened the angel's wings, and then rang off and tried to think if there were any other techs in Oxford for Christmas. Clearly not, or Gilchrist wouldn't have used a first-year apprentice in the first place. He put a call through to Magdalen anyway, but got no answer. He rang off, thought a minute, and then rang up Balliol. There was no answer there either. Finch must still be out, showing the American bell ringers the bells at Great Tom. He looked at his digital. It was only 2:30.
It seemed much later. They might only be at lunch.
He rang up the phone in Balliol's hall, but still got no answer. He went back into the waiting area, expecting Gilchrist to be there. He wasn't, but the two medics were, talking to a staff nurse. Gilchrist had probably gone back to Brazenose to plot his next drop, or the one after that. Perhaps he'd send Kivrin straight into the Black Death the third time round for direct observation.
There you are, the staff nurse said. I was afraid you'd left. If you'll just come with me.
Dunworthy had assumed she was speaking to him, but the medics followed her out the door too and down a corridor.
Here we are, then, she said, holding a door open for them.
The medics filed through.
There's tea on the trolley and a WC just through there.
When will I be able to see Badrish Chaudhuri?
Dunworthy asked, holding the door so she couldn't shut it.
Dr. Ahrens will be with you directly, she said, and shut the door in spite of him.
The female medic had already slouched down in a chair, her hands in her pockets. The man was over by the tea trolley, plugging in the electric kettle. Neither of them had asked the registrar any questions on the way down the corridor, so perhaps this was routine. Though Dunworthy couldn't imagine why they would want to see Badri, or why they had all been brought here. This waiting room was in an entirely different wing from the casualties ward. It had the same spine-destroying chairs of the waiting room in casualties, the same tables with inspirational pamphlets fanned out on them, the same foil garland draped over the tea trolley and secured with bunches of plastine holly. There were no windows, though, not even in the door. It was self-contained and private, the sort of room where people waited for bad news. Dunworthy sat down, suddenly tired. Bad news. An infection of some sort. BP 96, pulse 120, temp 39.5. The only other tech in Oxford off in Wales, and Basingame's secretary out doing her Christmas shopping, and Kivrin somewhere in 1320, days or even weeks from where she was supposed to be, or months. The male medic poured milk and sugar into a cup and stirred it, waiting for the electric kettle to heat. The woman appeared to have gone to sleep. Dunworthy stared at her, thinking about the slippage. Badri had said the preliminary calculations indicated minimal slippage, but they were only preliminary. Badri had told him he thought 2 weeks' slippage was likely, and that made sense. The farther back the historian was sent, the greater the average slippage. 20th century's drops usually had only a few minutes. 18th century's, a few hours. Magdalen, which was still running unmanned to the Renaissance, was getting slippage off from 3 to 6 days. But those were only averages. The slippage varied from person to person, and it was impossible to predict for any given drop. 19th century had had one off by 48 days, and in uninhabited areas, there was often no slippage at all. And often the amount seemed arbitrary, whimsical. When they'd run the first slippage checks for 20th century back in the 20s, he'd stood in Balliol's empty quad and been sent through to 2 a.m. on the 14th of September 1956, with only 3 minutes slippage. But when they sent him through again at 2:08, there had been nearly 2 hours, and he'd come through nearly on top of an undergraduate sneaking in after a night out. Kivrin might be 6 months from where she was supposed to be, with no idea of when the rendezvous was. And Badri had come running to the pub to tell him to pull her out. Mary came in, still wearing her coat. Dunworthy stood up.
Is it Badri?
He asked, afraid of the answer. He's still in casualties, she said. We need his NHS number, and we can't find his records in Balliol's file. Her grey hair was mussed again, but otherwise she seemed as businesslike as she was when she discussed Dunworthy's students with him.
He's not a member of the college,
Dunworthy said, feeling relieved.
Techs are assigned to the individual colleges, but they're officially employed by the university.
Then his records would be in the registrar's office. Good. Do you know if he's travelled outside England in the past month?
He did an on-site for 19th century in Hungary 2 weeks ago. He's been in England since then.
Has he had any relations visit him from Pakistan?
He hasn't any. He's third generation. Have you found out what he's got?
She wasn't listening. Where are Gilchrist and Montoya? She said.
You told Gilchrist to meet us here, but he hadn't come in yet when I was brought in here.
And Montoya?
She left as soon as the drop was completed, Dunworthy said.
Have you any idea where she might have gone?
No more than you have, Dunworthy thought. You watched her leave too. I assume she went back to Whitney to her dig. She spends the majority of her time there.
Her dig? Mary said, as if she'd never heard of it.
What is it? He thought. What's wrong? In Whitney, he said. The National Trust farm. She's excavating a medieval village.
Whitney, she said, looking unhappy. She'll have to come in immediately.
Shall I try to ring her up?
Dunworthy said, for Mary had already gone over to the medic standing by the tea trolley. I need you to fetch someone in from Whitney, she said to him. He put down his cup and saucer and shrugged on his jacket. From the National Trust site, Lupe Montoya. She went out the door with him. He expected her to come back as soon as she'd finished giving him the directions to Whitney. When she didn't, he started after her. She wasn't in the corridor. Neither was the medic. But the nurse from casualties was. I'm sorry, sir, she said, barring his path the way the registrar and casualties had. Dr. Ahrens asked that you wait for her here.
I'm not leaving the infirmary. I need to put a call through to my secretary.
I'll be glad to fetch you a phone, sir, she said firmly. She turned and looked down the corridor. Gilchrist and Latimer were coming.
Hope Miss Engel has the opportunity to observe a death, Gilchrist was saying. Attitudes towards death in the 1300s differed greatly from ours. Death was a common and accepted part of life, and the contempts were incapable of feeling loss or grief.
Mr. Dunworthy, the nurse said, tugging at his arm, if you'll just wait inside, I'll bring you a telephone. She went to meet Gilchrist and Latimer. If you'll come with me, please, she said, and ushered them into the waiting room.
I'm acting head of the history faculty, Gilchrist said, glaring at Dunworthy. Badri Chaudhuri is my responsibility.
Yes, sir, the nurse said, shutting the door. Dr. Ahrens will be with you directly. Latimer set his umbrella on one of the chairs and Mary's shopping bag on the one next to it. He had apparently retrieved all the parcels Mary had dumped on the floor. Dunworthy could see the muffler box and one of the Christmas crackers sticking out of the top.
We couldn't find a taxi, he said, breathing hard.
He sat down next to his burdens.
We had to take the tube.
Where is the apprentice tech you were going to use on the drop, Pahulski, from?
Dunworthy said.
I need to speak with him. Concerning what, if I may ask? Or have you taken over medieval entirely in my absence?
It's essential that someone read the fix and make sure it's all right.
You'd be delighted if something were to go wrong, wouldn't you? You've been attempting to obstruct this drop from the beginning.
Were to go wrong? Dunworthy said disbelievingly. It's already gone wrong. Badri is lying in hospital, unconscious, and we don't have any idea if Kivrin is when or where she's supposed to be.
You heard Badri. He said something was wrong with the fix.
We've got to get a tech here to find out what it is.
I should hardly put any credence in what someone says under the influence of drugs or dorfs or whatever it is he's been taking, Gilchrist said. And may I remind you, Mr. Dunworthy, that the only thing to have gone wrong on this drop is 20th Century's part in it. Mr. Verhulsky was doing a perfectly adequate job. However, at your insistence, I allowed your tech to replace him. It's obvious I shouldn't have.
The door opened, and they all turned and looked at it. The sister brought in a portable telephone, handed it to Dunworthy, and ducked out again.
I must ring up Brazenose and tell them where I am, Gilchrist said.
Dunworthy ignored him, flipped up the phone's visual screen, and rang up Jesus.
I need the names and home telephone numbers of your techs, he told the acting principal's secretary when she appeared on the screen. None of them are here over back, are they?
None of them were there. He wrote down the names and numbers on one of the inspirational pamphlets, thanked the senior tutor, hung up, and started on the list of numbers. The first number he punched was engaged. The others got him an engaged tone before he'd even finished punching in the town exchanges. And on the last, a computer voice broke in and said, All lines are engaged. Please attempt your call later. He rang Balliol, both the hall and his own office. He didn't get an answer at either number. Finch must have taken the Americans to London to hear Big Ben. Gilchrist was still standing next to him, waiting to use the phone. Latimer had wandered over to the tea cart and was trying to plug in the electric kettle. The medic came out of her drowse to assist him.
Have you finished with the telephone? Gilchrist said stiffly.
No, Dunworthy said, and tried Finch again. There was still no answer. He rang off.
I want you to get your tech back to Oxford and pull Kivrin out, now, before she's left the drop site.
You want? Gilchrist said.
Might I remind you that this is Medieval's drop, not yours?
It doesn't matter whose it is, Dunworthy said, trying to keep his temper.
It's university policy to abort a drop if there's any sort of problem.
May I also remind you that the only problem we've encountered on this drop is that you failed to screen your tech for dwarf. He reached for the phone.
I will decide if and when this drop needs to be aborted.
The phone rang.
Gilchrist here,
Gilchrist said.
Just a moment, please.
He handed the telephone to Dunworthy.
Mr. Dunworthy, Finch said, looking harried. Thank goodness. I've been calling round everywhere. You won't believe the difficulties I've had.
I've been detained, Dunworthy said before Finch could launch into an account of his difficulties. Now listen carefully. I need you to go and fetch Badri Chowdhury's employment file from the bursar's office. Dr. Ahrens needs it. Ring her up. She's here at infirmary. Insist on speaking directly to her. She'll tell you what information she wants from the file.
Yes, sir, Finch said, taking up a pad and pencil and taking rapid notes. As soon as you've done that, I want you to go straight to New College and see the senior tutor. Tell him I must speak with him immediately and give him this telephone number. Tell him it's an emergency, that it's essential that we locate Basingham. He must come back to Oxford immediately.
Do you think he'll be able to, sir?
What do you mean? Has there been a message from Basingham? Has something happened to him?
Not that I know of, sir.
Well, then, of course he'll be able to come back. He's only on a fishing trip. Not as if he's on a schedule. After you've spoken to the senior tutor, ask any staff and students you can find. Perhaps one of them has an idea as to where Basingham is. And while you're there, find out whether any of their techs are here in Oxford.
Yes, sir, Finch said. But what should I do with the Americans?
You'll have to tell them I'm sorry to have missed them, but that I was unavoidably detained. They're supposed to leave for Ely at 4, aren't they?
They were, but...
But what?
Well, sir, I took them round to see Great Tom and Old Marsden Church and all, but when I tried to take them out to Iffley, we were stopped.
Stopped?
Dunworthy said.
By whom?
The police, sir. They had barricades up. The thing is, the Americans are very upset about their handbell concert.
Barricades?
Dunworthy said.
Yes, sir. On the A4158.
Should I put the Americans up in Salvin, sir? William Gadsden and Tom Gailey are on the north staircase, but Vezeby's been painted.
I don't understand, Dunworthy said. Why were you stopped?
To quarantine, Finch said, looking surprised. I could put them in Fisher's. The heat's been turned off for vac, but they could use the fireplaces.
Transcript from the Doomsday Book. I'm back at the drop site. It's some distance from the road. I'm going to drag the wagon out onto the road so that my chances of being seen are better. But if no one happens along in the next half hour, I intend to walk to Skendgate, which I have located thanks to the bells of evening vespers. I am experiencing considerable time lag. My head aches pretty badly, and I keep having chills. The symptoms are worse than I understood them to be from Badri and Dr. Ahrens. The headache particularly. I'm glad the village isn't far. Chapter 5.
Quarantine. Of course, Dunworthy thought. The medics sent to fetch Montoya and Mary's questions about Pakistan, and all of them put here in this isolated, self-contained room with a ward sister guarding the door. Of course.
Will Salvin do, then, for the Americans? Finch was asking.
Did the police say why a
He stopped. Gilchrist was watching him, but Dunworthy didn't think he could see the screen from where he was. Latimer was fussing over the tea trolley, trying to open a sugar packet. The female medic was asleep.
Did the police say why these precautions had been taken?
No, sir. Only that it was Oxford and immediate environs, and to contact the National Health for instructions.
Did you contact them?
No, sir. I've been trying. I can't get through. All the trunk lines have been engaged. The Americans have been trying to reach Ely to cancel their concert, but the lines are jammed.
Oxford and environs. That meant they had stopped the tube as well, and the bullet train to London, as well as blocking all the roads. No wonder the lines were jammed.
How long ago was this? When you went out to Iffley?
It was a bit after 3, sir. I've been phoning round since then, trying to find you, and then I thought, perhaps he knows about it already. I rang up infirmary and then started calling round to all the hospitals.
I didn't know about it already, Dunworthy thought.
He tried to recall the conditions required for calling a quarantine. The original regulations had required it in every case of unidentified disease or suspicion of contagion. But those had been passed in the first hysteria after the pandemic, and they had been amended and watered down every few years since then, till Dunworthy had no idea what they were now. He did know that a few years ago they'd been absolute identification of dangerous infectious disease, because there'd been a fuss in the papers when Lassa fever had raged unchecked for 3 weeks in a town in Spain. The local doctors hadn't done viral typing, and the whole mess had resulted in a push to put teeth in the regulations. But he had no idea if they'd gone through.
Should I assign them rooms in Salvin, then, sir?
Finch asked again.
Yes. No. Put them in the junior common room for now. They can practice their changes or whatever it is they do. Get Badri's file and phone it in. If the lines are all engaged, you'd best phone it in to this number. I'll be here, even if Dr. Ahrens isn't. And then find out about Basingham. It's more important than ever that we locate him. You can assign the Americans rooms later.
They're very upset, sir.
So am I, Dunworthy thought.
Tell the Americans I'll find out what I can about the situation and ring you back.
He watched the screen go grey.
You can't wait to inform Basingham of what you perceive to be Medieval's failure, can you?
Gilchrist said.
In spite of the fact that it was your tech who had jeopardized this drop by using drugs. The fact of which you may be sure I will inform Mr. Basingham on his return.
Dunworthy looked at his digital. It was 4:30. Finch had said they'd been stopped at 3:00. An hour and a half. Oxford had only had 2 temp quarantines in recent years. One had turned out to be an allergic reaction to an injection, and the other one had turned out to be nothing at all, a schoolgirl prank. Both had been called off as soon as they had the results of the blood tests, and those hadn't taken even 1/4 hour. Mary had taken blood in the ambulance. Dunworthy had seen the medic hand the vials to the house officer when they came into casualties. There had been ample time for them to obtain the results.
I'm certain Mr. Basingham will also be interested in hearing that it was your failure to have your tech screened that's resulted in this drop being jeopardized, Gilchrist said.
Dunworthy should have recognized the symptoms as those of an infection. Badri's low blood pressure, his labored breathing, his elevated temp. Mary had even said in the ambulance that it had to be an infection of some kind with his temp that high. But he had assumed she meant a localized infection, staph, or an inflamed appendix. And what disease could it be? Smallpox and typhoid had been eradicated back in the 20th century, and polio in this one. Bacterials didn't have a chance against antibody specification, and the antivirals worked so well nobody even had colds anymore.
It seems distinctly odd that after being so concerned about the precautions Medieval was taking, that you wouldn't take the obvious precaution of screening your tech for drugs, Gilchrist said.
It must be a third world disease. Mary had asked all those questions about whether Badri had been out of the community, about his Pakistani relatives. But Pakistan wasn't third world. And Badri couldn't have gone out of the community without a whole series of inoculations. And he hadn't gone outside the EC. Except for the Hungarian on-site, he'd been in England all term.
I would like to use the telephone, Gilchrist was saying. I quite agree that we need Basingham here to take matters in hand.
Dunworthy was still holding the phone. He blinked at it, surprised.
Do you mean to prevent me from phoning Basingham?
Gilchrist said. Latimer stood up.
What is it?
He said, his arms held out, as if he thought Dunworthy might pitch forward into them.
What's wrong?
Badri isn't using, Dunworthy said to Gilchrist. He's ill.
I fail to see how you can claim to know that without having run a screen.
Gilchrist said, looking pointedly at the phone.
We're under quarantine, Dunworthy said. It's some sort of infectious disease.
It's a virus,
Mary said from the door.
We don't have it sequenced yet, but the preliminary results ID it as a viral infection.
She had unbuttoned her coat, and it flapped behind her like Kivrin's cloak as she hurried into the room. She was carrying a lab tray by the handle. It was piled high with equipment and paper packets.
The tests indicate that it's probably a mix of virus, she said, setting the tray down on one of the end tables.
Badri's symptoms are compatible with that. High fever, disorientation, headache. It's definitely not a retrovirus or a picornavirus, which is good news. But it will be some time yet before we have a complete ID.
She pulled 2 chairs up next to the table and sat down on one.
We've notified the World Influenza Center in London,
and sent them samples for ident and sequencing. Until we have a positive ID, a temp quarantine has been called as required by NHS regulations in cases of possible epidemic conditions. She pulled on a pair of imperm gloves.
Epidemic? Gilchrist said, shooting a furious glance at Dunworthy, as if accusing him of engineering the quarantine to discredit medieval.
Possible epidemic conditions, Mary corrected, tearing open paper packets. There is no epidemic as yet, but Dries is the only case so far. We've run a community computer check, and there have been no other cases with Badri's profile, which is also good news.
How can he have a viral infection? Gilchrist said, still glaring at Dunworthy.
I suppose Mr. Dunworthy didn't bother to check for that either.
Badri's an employee of the university, Mary said. He should have had the usual start of term physical and antivirals.
You don't know, Gilchrist said.
The registrar's office is closed for Christmas, she said. I haven't been able to reach the registrar, and I can't call up Badri's files without his NHS number.
I've sent my secretary to our bursar's office to see if we have hard copies of the university's files, Dunworthy said. We should at the least have his number.
Good, Mary said. We'll be able to tell a good deal more about the sort of virus we're dealing with when we know what antivirals Badri's had and how recently. He may have a history of anomalous reactions, and there's also a chance he's missed a seasonal.
Do you happen to know his religion, Mr. Dunworthy? Is he New Hindu?
Dunworthy shook his head.
He's Church of England, he said,
knowing what Mary was getting at. The New Hindus believed that all life was sacred, including killed viruses, if killed was the right word. They refused to have any inoculations or vaccines. The university gave them waivers on religious grounds, but didn't allow them to live in college.
Badri's had his starter term clearance. He'd never have been allowed to work the net without it.
Mary nodded, as if she had already come to that conclusion. As I said, this is very likely an anomaly.
Gilchrist started to say something, but stopped when the door opened. The nurse who had been guarding the door came in wearing a mask and gown and carrying pencils and a sheaf of papers in her imperm-gloved hands.
As a precaution, we need to test those people who have been in contact with the patient for antibodies. We'll need bloods and temps, and we need each of you to list all of your contacts and those of Mr. Choudhury.
The nurse handed several sheets of paper and a pencil to Dunworthy. The top sheet was in a hospital admissions form. The one underneath was headed primaries and divided into columns marked name, location, time. The bottom sheet was just the same, except that it was headed secondaries.
Since Badri is our only case, Mary said, we are considering him the index case. We do not have a positive mode of transmission yet. So you must list anyone who's had any contact with Badri, however momentary. Anyone he spoke to, touched, has had any contact with.
Dunworthy had a sudden image of Badri leaning over Kivrin, adjusting her sleeve, moving her arm.
Anyone at all who may have been exposed, Mary said.
Including all of us, the medic said.
Yes, Mary said.
And Kivrin, Dunworthy said.
For a moment, she looked like she had no idea at all who Kivrin was.
Miss Engel has had full-spectrum antivirals and T-cell enhancement, Gilchrist said.
She would not be at risk, would she?
Dr. Ahrens hesitated only a second.
No, she didn't have any contact with Badri before this morning, did she?
Mr. Dunworthy only offered me the use of his tech 2 days ago,
Gilchrist said, practically snatching the papers and pencil the nurse was offering him out of her hands.
I, of course, assumed that Mr. Dunworthy had taken the same precautions with his techs
which Medieval had. It has become apparent, however, that he didn't. And you may be sure I will inform Basingham of your negligence, Mr. Dunworthy.
If Kivrin's first contact with Badri was this morning, she was fully protected, Mary said. Mr. Gilchrist, if you'd be so good.
She indicated the chair, and he came and sat down. Mary took one of the sets of papers from the nurse and held up the sheet marked primaries. Any person Badri had contact with is a primary contact. Any person you have had contact with is a secondary. On this sheet, I would like you to list all contacts you have had with Badri Chowdhury over the last 3 days, and any contacts of his that you know of. On this sheet, she held up the sheet marked secondaries. List all your contacts with the time you had them. Begin with the present. And work backward. She popped a temp into Gilchrist's mouth, peeled a portable monitor off its paper strip and stuck it on his wrist. The nurse passed the papers out to Latimer and the medic. Dunworthy sat down and began filling out his own. The infirmary form asked for his name, National Health Service number, and a complete medical history, which the NHS number could no doubt call up in better detail than he could remember it. Illnesses, surgeries, inoculations. If Mary didn't have Badri's NHS number, that meant he was still unconscious.
This ends side 2 of cassette 2 of Doomsday Book. Please fast forward to the end before loading cassette 3.